Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal, Text Number 19. Naitat Parvarshayas Chakrur Karishanti Chapare Nirambur Dwarayat Pranan Kovai Divya Sama Satam. Na Not Etat This Purva Rishaya. The sages before you, such as Bhrigu, Chakru, executed. Na Nor Karishanti will execute. Cha also. Apare others. Nirambu without drinking water. Daryat can sustain. Pranan the life air. Ka who by indeed. Divya Sama, celestial years, Shatam, 100. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Even saintly persons like Bhrigu, born previously, could not perform such severe austerities, nor will anyone in the future be able to do so. Who within these three worlds can sustain his life without even drinking water for 100 celestial years? Purport. It appears that even if a yogi does not drink a drop of water, he can live for many, many years by the yoga process, though his outer body be eaten by ants and warts. Text 20. Oh, my dear son of Diti, with your great determination and austerity, you have done what is impossible even for great saintly persons. And thus I have certainly been conquered by you. Purport. In regard to the word jita, Srila Madhva Muni gives the following quotation from the Shabda Nirnaya. Para bhutam vasha stam shadit bid shajita bid uchate buddhai. One comes under someone else's control or is defeated by another, he is called jita. Hiranyakashipu's austerity was so great and wonderful that even Lord Brahma agreed to be conquered by him. Text 21. O best of the Asuras, for this reason, I am now prepared to give you all benedictions, according to your desire. I belong to the celestial world of demigods, who do not die like human beings. Therefore, although you are subject to death, your audience with me will not go in vain. For it appears that human beings and Asuras are subject to death, whereas demigods are not. The demigods who reside with Lord Brahma and Satyaloka go to Vaikuntha Loka in their present bodily constructions at the time of the dissolution. Therefore, although Hiranyakashipu had undergone severe austerities, Lord Brahma predicted that he had to die. He could not become immortal or even gain equal status with the demigods. The great austerities and penances he had performed for so many years could not give him protection from death. This was foretold by Lord Brahma. Prabhupada's purports generally follow the mood of the verse. Prabhupada could point out that actually Brahma doesn't always go back to Vaikuntha Loka, because sometimes Brahma is not, there are different kinds of Brahmas. There's karma Brahmas, karmi Brahmas, there's Jnani Brahmas, and there's devotee Brahmas. And the devotee Brahmas don't always go back in the same body that they're Brahman, because that's not necessarily their relation with Krishna. Our Brahma, for instance, it was revealed to him that he was one of the eternal maidservants of Krishna. So to go back as a Manjari or a Gopi in Krishna's pastimes and have four heads would rather be strange. So obviously he gets his spiritual body and then he joins Krishna in one of his leelas and gets trained up to become a devotee in the Madhurya Rasa. Or another Brahmin in the Bhagavatam is a cowherd boy and shook hands with Krishna. Obviously, he doesn't play with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Everyone else has one head and he has four. That's not the way it works. Or you go, imagine if you were Brahma in some universe and you had 10 million heads and you got liberation, you go back and you're in Goloka Vrindavan with 10 million heads. All the little children would look, hey, look, mommy. Who is that guy? What is he doing here? And sometimes we find that Brahma, if he's not perfect, then he goes up to Garbhadakshai Vishnu at the time of annihilation, and then he has to come back again to the material world. In any case, comparison to us, Brahma doesn't die, but Krishna says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, Punaravartanojana, Mamupetya, Tukonteya, Punarjanma Navidite. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, they're all places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. So, it is not a contradiction compared to us. Brahma has, practically is deathless, amara. But that doesn't mean he doesn't die. Even Satyaloka is destroyed. Even the coverings of the universe are destroyed. And everyone goes, winds up back into the body of Mahavishnu, asleep, resting for another 311 trillion years, 40 billion years. But for Mahavishnu, it's just a respiration. Inhale and exhale. Now we may think he has a really long breathing cycle. 311 trillion years later, he's finally inhaled. Everything's destroyed. And now it's time. Slow, slow exhale. Now for Mahavishnu, it's normal breathing. For us, it's inconceivable time. In any case, Aranyakashipu is a madman. But then again, we understand every asura must be mad because he's covered by the illusory energy. Nunam pramattak kurute praravas tavada bodha jata yavana jignasita atmatatvam yavan kriyas tavadi dhammanovai karmatmaka yena sharira bandaha. They don't know that they're being defeated by the illusory energy. They think they're defeating everyone, but they're just being defeated by the illusory energy because it's all a dream, both for the controllers of the universe and for those who are being controlled. Dream in this sense, they imagine something that's not really real. They imagine that they're the controller. But Krishna says, anadivam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam sharira stopikundaya nakaruti nanalipyate. That those who can see with the eyes of eternity can see that the soul is eternal, transcendental, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body, Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. So we're actually not doing anything. Nor are we actually even entangled. Nothing can harm the soul. The soul is mightier than Superman. Superman, he had kryptonite as his potential source of disaster, but the soul has no kryptonite. Nothing can harm him. He's nainam chandanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavaka, achainam kleda yantyapaho, ashoshiti marata. The soul can't be cut to pieces by any weapons, or moistened by burnt by fire, nor moistened by water, even withered by the wind. all these, so earth, water, fire, air, can't harm the soul. But the soul can be an illusion. And when they're an illusion, then the soul thinks, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, I am so many things that he actually isn't. So therefore he's dreaming. He's thinking one thing is going on, well actually something else is really going on. He's desiring, and Krishna in his heart senses his desire, just like one can understand the smell of a flower by being near it. And then according to one's karma, what he deserves, then Krishna, and what he desires, Krishna orders the entire universe to arrange itself in a way to fulfill all the desires and all the karma of all the living entities and every species of life throughout the entire creation. So nothing goes on by accident. Everyone is contributing to the total karmic reactions that everyone is experiencing, but one's karmic reactions are personalized. One is responsible for one's own desires. And ultimately, since desire is manifested as thinking, feeling, willing, ultimately for what he's willing also, which manifests itself as activities. So the soul is responsible, but he's not directly doing anything. He's desiring to turn on a certain channel. He turns on the channel, but he doesn't really become part of the movie. He becomes the experience of the movie, identifies with it, desires according to what's going on, hoping that the hero, or maybe the demon, the villain, depends who what his mentality is going to win. He's absorbed in the illusion. He's absorbed in what's been created in order to absorb him in a certain type of experience, but he's actually not part of the experience. He's experiencing, but he's not actually participating in the actual activities. So the soul desires and experiences, but is not the doer. The material nature is the cause of all suffering and enjoyment, but the living entity is the cause of all the material nature is the cause of all reactions and effects, activities and effects, while the soul is the cause of the different types of sufferings and enjoyments. Purusha prakriti so hi bhunte prakriti jangunan. That's the other one. Karna karna kartive hetur prakriti uchite purusha sukaduka anam bhoktive hetur uchite. The material nature is the source of all actions and reactions. The living entity is the cause of the different types of sufferings and enjoyments. We suffer and enjoy, identifying ourselves with our activities, and then when this desire comes by our mind, we identify with it, and we desire it. We think about it, we feel, and then we desire to fulfill it, and then it gets carried out according to Krishna's arrangements. So even if you become a great big demon like Hiranyakashipu, or a little tiny ant, yes, Indra Gopam of Hendra Swako Swaho Sukarma, you become Indra, or you become the insignificant Indra Gopa germ, the same thing is going on. The little tiny soul is desiring and Krishna is fulfilling the desire. Now we may think, oh, look at that little soul, Indra Gopa germ, it's doing nothing. It's useless. But also the soul in the body of Brahma is also doing nothing. It's all arranged by Krishna. Brahma is not, the soul within the Brahma's body is not Brahma. It's the same soul whether he's in the body of Indra Gopa or he's in the body of Brahma. It's the same soul. But because the soul in the body of Brahma had desired from past lifetimes to be in harmony with Krishna, therefore he was put into the body of Brahma. And the soul, which was antagonistic, averse to following Krishna's instructions, was degraded and put into the body of Indra Gopa Germ. But the soul in the Indra Gopa Germ is expected in the course of time. He'll get another opportunity and he can desire for Krishna. Maybe he'll be a Brahma or go back to the spiritual world. It's not the end of the story. the end of the story. There is no end to the story because we're all eternal. But there will be an end to Harikashipu's story because that's what Krishna wants. He wants, he sent Harikashipu to show us that even if you become as powerful as Harikashipu, then eventually you have an end of the story. There's no one who can defy Krishna because Krishna is doing everything through his material nature, and there's no exception. Maya dakshena prakriti suite sachacharam hetu nane kuntya ligati parivartate. This divine, this material nature is working under my direction, not under Hiranyakashipu's direction, and producing all moving and non-moving beings, and by its rule, this creation is manifested and annihilated. So it's all working under Krishna's direction through his material nature. All the soul can do is choose. Either he can be in harmony with Krishna and become enlightened, or he can be antagonistic towards Krishna's desires and be put into the modes of nature, either in goodness or in passion or in ignorance, depending upon one's aversion or one's willingness to follow Krishna. Therefore, the conclusion is that these stories in the Bhagavatam are instructive, that you become as powerful as Hiranyakashipu, it's not going to make any difference. Your longevity, your power, everything is already controlled. It's all part of Krishna's pastime. And you become as Prahlad, then you may not be accomplishing austerity, you may not be accomplishing knowledge and anything, but if you just rely upon Krishna, then Krishna will come and help you. That's all has to be done. If you think Krishna is the controller, then you call out to Krishna, Krishna will reveal to you that he can protect you. If you think that Krishna is the enjoyer, then you try to please Krishna, and then Krishna will please you, and we'll understand what real enjoyment is. And if we think that Krishna is our real friend, that he's everyone's friend, then we'll work for Krishna, and then we'll do something good for everyone. And if we don't work for Krishna, then whatever we do will not be good for ourselves, and it won't be good for anyone else either, no matter how much we may be glorified by modern propaganda. Modern propaganda is taking insignificant people, actually people who are not worthy of praise, and by some trick or something, by publicity, by PR, public relations, making them to appear as good people when they're actually the lowest of mankind. Or they're asuras, or they're maya priti gyanas, or they're simply mudhas. So the people who are glorifying them are simply smaller versions of the bigger animals, that's all. So we should understand who's actually glorifiable, who's actually worthy of our attention, who's actually worthy of our service, and then we will avoid the problems of what Hiranyakashipu is going to face. Fighting against time and ultimately being defeated. It's paravas. That there is strenuous working, then there's exhaustion, foam at the mouth. Then there is defeat. Then there is death. Then there is fearfulness, fear, bita, and then there is defeat. Did I leave something out there? Defeat. Meet beta. Pa, ba, and ma. Paravas. So, Hiranyakashipu is going to experience that, and we should, oh, stupid Hiranyakashipu. Well, we're just as stupid as he is. We stay in this material world. There's really no difference. Whether you're a big animal or a small animal, you're still an animal. In the jungle, Prabhupada said there are so many animals, some of them are like the tiger, and people, oh, bad animal. And some of them are like a deer, oh, gentle animal, such a nice animal. But at the end of the day, they're all animals. It's ferocious or gentle, whatever. They're all animals. They're all suffering the same. They're in ignorance of who they actually are. So we have to get out of that ignorance and understand that Krishna is the controller, Krishna is the enjoyer, and Krishna is the friend, and not Hiranyakashipu or anyone else, including ourselves. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
You mentioned gentle deer, and this is our impression of deer, but in the Bhagavatam even we hear many times that even Parikshit was hunting for a deer. So we know that they often train hunting some dangerous game like tigers. Why would they hunt deer, the Kshatriyas?
They're easy to kill. You go out hunting for a tiger, you can't find one, and you hit the first thing you can see. No, I don't. I mean, we find that when Yudhisthira and when Krishna and Arjuna were out practicing hunting, then Arjuna killed many different varieties of animals. Some of them could be brought for sacrifice and some of them couldn't. The ferocious ones he killed because they're making disturbance. But the more gentle ones he killed for it to be offered in sacrifice. Job of a kshatriya is not so pleasant, actually. Prabhupada, one place, he said, actually, human life begins at the brahminical stage. So although they were great exalted personalities, they had to do things which were less than desirable sometimes in order to perform their duty. Even Muchakunda, after he saw Krishna directly and talked to him, I mean, how many people get the chance to see Krishna directly and talk to him in his form? Still, he couldn't go back to Godhead. He wasn't even a Vaishnav yet. He took one out of the cave, and he saw the trees were like little bushes because he came from a different era, different yuga. And then he walked to the Himalayas so he can perform devotional service, meditate on Krishna. And so in his next life, he could become a Vaishnava. Because he wasn't completely free of the sinful reactions for killing animals. So although sometimes they say they don't get a sinful reaction, well, the reaction is your heart is not completely purified. It can only be purified to an extent, and you have to work on it in a different mode. Yes?
And what was the principle of purification in sacrificing animals? Parikshit Maharaj performed 3 Ashwamedha Yagyas, Prito performed 99 and half.
Well, of course, in those sacrifices, Ashwamedha and others, the animal was given life again by the chanting of mantras. Because these sacrifices cost, you know, nowadays it would be millions of dollars or euros. So you wanted to make sure that the priest was going to deliver what he was promising to deliver. Because by chanting mantras, they're supposed to be able to control the demigods in the universe. If they can't do that, you don't get the purpose of the sacrifice. So before they wasted all those euros throwing the ghee and the gold and the jewels, they test the priest first. Priest. So there was mantras that if you sacrifice an animal, you chant a certain mantra. Well, first of all, they'd have to light the sacrifice by mantra. They didn't have some chemical in the fire or something like that. No, they actually had it, and it lit 5 minutes later. They actually had to chant a mantra and light the fire. And then they'd sacrifice the animal and they had to bring it back to life. Otherwise, they didn't go on with the sacrifice and waste all the material for the sacrifice. The priest had to show his prowess in order to perform the sacrifice before they did it, not afterwards. Oh, I'm so sorry to spend 30 million euros on the sacrifice, but unfortunately, the only thing that came out was some burnt piece of wood. Maybe you can put it as, you know, in your palace as remembrance for the sacrifice. No, they had to deliver the goods. Yes.
We see that Hiranyakashipu gets to be killed by Narasimhadev, and that seems to be somewhat beneficial for him, or beneficial for him. And this was also my impression from the very, very first reading of the Bhagavad Gita, that for the demons, if someone is a demon, then he has to become a really, really big and hateful demon to be killed by Krishna, and then he gets some benefit.
Yes. Oh, everyone gets benefit if you're fighting. It depends. The demons who fought, for instance, in the shore of the ocean of milk, like even Kali Nimi, he was killed by, well, of course he was killed by Vishnu, but even those who were killed on that battle, they took birth as Brahmins in Kali Yuga, the shore of the ocean of milk, between the demigods and the demons. So if you fight a battle which is based on something of religious principles, you do get benefited. If you fight simply for sense gratification, you may not get it. The same kind of benefit, but if you fight selflessly, simply as a matter of duty, then you get benefited for it. Yes.
So as to practice Madhyam devotees' behavior, we avoid demons. But come to think of it, if they even hate Krishna, they get some benefit, because Vena was a demon and did not hate. They meditate on Krishna.
No, not necessarily. You have to be really a good meditator if you're a demon. Because King Vena, he also hated Krishna. But because he wasn't so fixed up in his meditation, he went to hell. You have to be completely determined. You have to become, because you just think of Krishna sometimes. It means you're not always thinking of him, so you're going to get the reactions when you're not thinking about him. You think about Krishna all the time, then you're more or less, at least, you're not on the material platform, you're on the spiritual platform. Although you're not going to go back to the spiritual world, in one sense, you'll merge in Brahman, which is also spiritual. But if you're not going to merge in Brahman, you're going to get a lot of reactions for your impious activities, and for your offenses. Besides that, Kaivalya Narakayate, Tridashapura Kashapushpayate, for the Vaishnavas, they consider merging Brahman as worse than going to hell. So we don't admire the demons, because sometimes they merge in Brahman. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.